Welcome one and all throughout time and space for this episode of Weebs on the Weekends, the podcast where we break down the anime news highlights of the week and give a retrospective look on an anime that premiered 10 years ago. Today's episode, we will cover the anime that we have reviewed this previous year of 2012, and we will compile our top 10 anime for this same year. My name is Sam Martinez. I'm a part-time weeb, full-time automail mechanic, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jay Johnson, part-time weeb, full-time Gaigoku Kansara. Now, Jay, you said there were some Marvel properties that you wanted to talk about, Jay.
Oh, yeah, just looking at 2012 as a year, because I kind of just skipped over She-Hulk. I saw the video of her twerking, and I was like, huh, maybe this isn't for me. But, you know, I'm very... But it's very interesting that they kind of changed their marketing around Marvel properties this year as well. They're calling them like special presentations now. So the first special Marvel presentation was Werewolf by Night. And boy, howdy, was I blown away by that. And it's so like diverse from whatever we've gotten before with Loki as well as WandaVision. And same thing with... Was it just called Hawkeye?
No. You're talking about Clint Barton. Yeah, that was just regular Hawkeye, and then you have Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Got you. But yeah, it's odd that Marvel hasn't tapped into all their bizarre stuff yet. The bizarre mystical stuff. I mean, of course, Blade is probably doing that in a couple of years, but now that they've lost their director. And the production schedule has been halted or delayed. So, like, Werewolf by Night is probably what we're going to get for now. But the direction they're obviously going to go in is, like, following the Midnight Suns and how they introduce, I hope this is not a spoiler, but how they have Man-Thing incorporated into Werewolf by Night, as well as all the ideas of the mystical creatures that go on in Marvel in that series. It's just so kind of endearing that there's still life in the Marvel MCU that we're kind of just over exhausted with like the big movies, but if they go very small and it just becomes occasional, then I think Marvel's going to be really successful. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm just saying that Werewolf by Night kind of reinvigorated my love for Marvel again.
It's funny that you say that, because I was watching She-Hulk, and I watched She-Hulk right before Werewolf by Night, and a lot of people had some thoughts regarding the ending of She-Hulk. I think I might have mentioned it, but it sort of catches you off guard in a sense, where it's like, this is like, why do they go this way? Like, at first it makes you think that like they sort of went on the out the rails, but then how they had conducted the show the entire time, you're like, oh no, it was going to go this direction anyways. And in doing so, they had addressed some of the stereotypes that Marvel sort of started doing for themselves. And I'm sitting there, I'm watching Werewolf by Night, and it's, you know, the story's going very, very well. I'm not familiar with the main character that we follow, so it's a nice, good opening, introductory work that we're seeing. And then like near the end, they sort of fall for a trope that She-Hulk poked fun of, and it's like, I saw it coming because of watching She-Hulk. It's like, oh, they do this in a lot of their story. It was still fun, but it's like, now I can't unsee it, right? It's like, after having the curtain being pulled from your eyes, it's like, this, they do this a whole lot. Like, now that they know, maybe they'll start changing up the formula. We'll see. But aside from that, Werewolf by Night, it's been, like you said, very fun. The way that they do it, it's shot very artistically, and it's very reminiscent of, say, old school horror films, especially because of the subject matter. And it's a very, very interesting watch. So I definitely do suggest those who are into the spooky stuff to partake in.
Yeah, it's also like what you said about it being akin to the old black and white monster films. It's very slow as well, so don't come into it thinking that it's just going to be monster hunting and gore and blood, which, you know, it is in fair part of it. But
there is that, yeah.
There is a lot of exposition, slow dialogue, a lot of, like, acting moments for the actors to, you know, really get into, like, the drama of it. But, yeah, just overall, this is a good way to wrap up the end of the year. And there's, like, just other properties I'm thinking about since we're coming to the close of our annual or yearly review. Like, this is a good year for just superheroes in general, because we had Boys Diabolical, as well as the third season of The Boys came back. We had The Sandman. We had new Game of Thrones. Not superheroes, but, you know, magical fantasy stuff. As well as, what else am I thinking about for Marvel? She-Hulk, which I didn't... Oh, I was thinking about Daredevil Reborn, but that just was teased.
She-Hulk, yes, that was probably, like, the better episodes when Daredevil was involved.
So
that's a huge fan consensus there.
Exactly. Plus, his new suit is kind of killer, and I think that's going to be, like, the highlight costume for next year, probably. But, yeah, overall, I think it was a good year, outside of the anime that we watched, but, yeah, good year for TV in general this year.
I guess. So, that's, do we have anything else that we would like to cover or discuss before we go into our news? Not news, to our list. So, time codes, descriptions, dibbly-doo boxes, doing my best not to do any more awkward pauses for the sake of the show. We are almost near the end of the year. We can't mess this up now, Sam. We can't mess this up now. We're almost at the 100th episode. We gotta keep on going. We will be going over our personal top 10 list for this entire year of 2012 anime that we have seen, and we will be going through this going through our list in the fashion of our most famous game, Weeb Skitball. Now, Jay, would you please remind us of the rules for Weeb Skitball?
Of course, because it's my favorite sport next to volleyball. But Weeb Skitball is basically our top 10 list making game where we trade one apiece, and in the ruling of Yeet, where if it's a spot higher than the one that we just claim, like my 10 is your number one, which never happens, but if that ever happens to Yeet, and we'll save the discussion for later. Kobe, meaning it's in the same spot, so my 10 is your 10, and then a bench means that my 10 is nowhere on your list at all. So we trade one apiece until we get to our whole list, and then at the end, we combine the list to make sure that is a fair list of balanced interests as well as opinions for our viewers to check out. So Sam, since this is going on towards, like, I guess the end of your main host duties, because we're on episode 99, next episode is 100, and 101 would be your last episode as main host, and then we switch back because we do that every 50 episodes. So let's you go first, and what is your number 10?
So, my number 10 is the anime Suritama.
Oh, interesting. That's a bench for me.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, we're starting out pretty differently. So, if the audience remembers, Suritama was our episode 73, where we had covered a sort of slice of life-esque anime, where we follow this shut-in individual, and he is learning how to fish. I can't remember. I think it was his grandmother had pushed him to try and make friends, and this was the activity that they were all sort of gravitating towards, because one of his colleagues, someone in his cohort used to fish competitively, and that's how he was learning how to fish. And there was also a guy who shows up at his doorstep who claims to be an alien, and there's an Indian man who's 22 years old who tries to finesse his way into their classroom, and he has a pet duck that rocks with him. So it's very, very, it seems like it was a very fun time. I didn't get a chance to finish it, but it seemed to be a good, light enough slice of life to be enjoyable, and as well as I would say, very easily digestible for a newer comer to anime. And so that's a bit why I have put it on for my number 10.
All right, cool. Yeah, so again, our stipulations for our list can be different. So again, my stipulation is that if I didn't actually complete the first season, then it's not going to be on my list. So I never went back. So I don't know. I think the premise was interesting enough, but again, like the mystery box elements of it, like, is he actually an alien? Which, again, is really strong evidence that he is, since he has this gun that makes people have amnesia, but also, in the meantime, having amnesia, that they're doing things that he's instructing them to do. So, again, it's one of those very weird, bizarre, absurdist comedies that doesn't fit into a lot of people's sense of humor. But, yeah, very interesting sci-fi story, maybe used a little bit. Need a little bit stronger 3-episode ruling for me to go back, but so it's an honorable mention, but I don't think I'm going to remember 2012 for it as all. But what I will
it remember, happened.
Yeah, it did happen.
So Jay, what's your number 10?
Yeah, my number 10, maybe it might be higher on your list, but it was our episode 85, which was on Sword Art Online.
Oh, that is a bench for me.
Oh, interesting. Starting off of both our lists with benches. Nice. So this is a A1 Pictures production, 25 episodes for its first season, available on Crunchyroll, Hulu, Netflix, anywhere, because it's like one of the most popular animes in the world next to, or not even popular, but, you know, has a claim for being iconic for the year. So we talked enough, you know, good things about it. It's one of our guest episodes. So we talked 2 hours about it. So we have our most in-depth thoughts expressed there, but why it's so low on my list is because only 12, 13 episodes are good, and then the rest is really garbage. So by that process of elimination for how memorable it is, as well as I really think those first 12 episodes are like some of the best, you know, of this kind of genre there is, because there's a lot of other video game centric animes out there, but this one kind of does it in the first way. I know Doc Hack Sign did it originally back in the 80s, but this was kind of like the modern interpretation of what our sensibilities would be towards the video game community, as well as, oh, we just passed the actual launch date of Sword Art Online, the video game, in real time, which is kind of bizarre.
Oh, so okay.
I thought, it launched in the anime Sword Art Online, the game launched on October 31st, 2022. So we just passed that date in real life. So it's kind of wild to say, oh yeah, this anime predicted the future and we're nowhere close to that. Kito, Black Swordsman, goes into a game, virtual game, gets trapped, becomes a death game. Everyone knows the story, but just thought it was a good boundary line for my top 10 list. But yeah, but it's not on your list at all, so interesting.
No, because I have a better one on my list. We shall get to it when we get to it.
Awesome, cool. So what is your number 9 then?
My number 9 is Sempogear.
Wow, that is a Kobe.
What?
That is wild.
Oh my goodness. Oh my damn. We going ham. So, Jay, did you want to talk a little bit about Sempogear?
Oh yeah, because it was my choice. It happened on our episode 72, so quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. But it has 13 episodes. It's available on Verve and done by Studio Satellite. And the reason why I put it above SAO is because it's a little bit more, you know, in tune with, I guess, a core theme, because there's a lot of mech elements to it, with how it blends with musicality. It isn't really a music anime, but, you know, they do use music in a very interesting way, not in like the, it's about the music, but it has like this side feature of it as well. So like their suits are attuned to their musical capabilities. It is a not cute girls doing cute thing anime, I wouldn't say, but it is the whole cast is takes up by girls. So it kind of leans a little bit to that genre or that appeal. It's like shonen for girls. I forgot what that's called. Is that shoujo?
Yeah, shoujo.
So very interesting. There's some few like story beats that don't really align that well. The writing isn't that strong, but I do like the mech fights. They are given enough budget to make it interesting. as well as a, you know, a plot that makes sense in the world that they're trying to portray. But yeah, it's a solid, you know, bare minimum anime for the year. But why were you so in turmoil about it yourself?
Because with this spot, it was between this one and Zetman. And as far as being on my top 10 list, like in this particular spot, they are both, they both have quality or similar merits. As you said before, the story, it's a little bit novel. And I like the fact that it has females being the focal point for this force of conflict, because we don't really have anything for females outside of the magical girl genre that's a little bit like high octane in action. And with this, like, they sort of are in the same vein with pop idol shows. So not as awesome as Vivi is, but within that same or similar vein. And I can see that, you know, being needed in anime, right? Because at least like to showcase to the young female audience that, you know, you can like action too, but you don't necessarily have to dress up as a princess to do it. Like, you can also rock with your mecha vibes if you have that. And with Zetman, just like the story and the dark undertones that I've mentioned in the episode, it's good, but it's not necessarily the best anime adaptation. So that's why it's a little bit lower on the list, but it's still very enjoyable. I guess because of what we've seen in our views and the number of views that we've had for our Simple Gear episode, it seems like Simple Gear definitely does resonate with our audience a little bit more. So I'm putting it on there as well, a little bit because it seems like there's something else in Simple Gear that I am missing. That makes it resonate with people. So that's why I chose it instead of Zet.
Yeah, I mean, we've only talked about the first season and the first three episodes, and I did watch the full run of the 13 episodes, and I see why it does lend itself to multiple seasons, because it's based off a base premise of any shonen title of, like, oh, big evil organization doing mischievous things in the world, and new characters and interesting dynamics and powers. Again, we're using music as kind of the basis of their magic system, you know, their mech system, whatever. So it's like, oh, this is a alto seeker, and then this is a soprano, kind of, and it changes the dynamic of their suits and the weaponry that they have. So again, there's enough creativity. So it does lean into like mecha, idol shows, the shonen power system, as well as a tournament arc that I know about.
They have a tournament arc? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, in the future seasons as well. So, yeah, it's like just a very blank slate that you can literally just throw everything at the wall and everything catches. So I think there is a lot of strength to that, of being a blank slate for Simple Gear, and it shows with the dedicated fans of it as well as this merchandise. But, yeah, that's a Kobe. So awesome. So a bench, a Kobe, and now we're on to your number eight, Sam.
For my number eight, it would be Jormungand.
That is a yeet.
All right. We can come back to it a little bit later then.
All right.
Cool. What is your number eight?
All right. My number eight, see if this made your list, but my number eight is our episode 96 on Girls und Panzer.
Oh, that's a bench for me.
Yeah, I know, and I know I don't have to say someone mentioned that, so I'm going to...
We don't talk about them.
Yeah, but Girls und Panzer is, again, leans a little bit far. So I gave Sound of the Sky my best anime choice when we, in our first year of the podcast for that year, 2010. Mm-hmm. And this leans a little bit more into the dimension of, like, setting inside of, you know, the real world, because there is, again, the big criticism of Sound of the Sky was that it was just too fluffy, that there was really no grittiness to military service in that, and the sci-fi elements kind of keeps it aloft for that reason. But with Girls Panzer, there was a attention to detail to incorporating a real-world dimension of what if Japan went hyper-military or hyper-militarized versus demilitarizing after World War II, and turning the art of tankery into a cultural touchstone for girls. And I thought that was such an interesting idea, and they do execute it. They do execute it on it very well. And oh, I didn't even mention that it's by Asus Studios, which I again talked about how they've only done a few anime in the 2010s, but they were known for the Cybertron and Energon. I think that was the two properties before. And 12 episodes, very easily digestible, as well as available on Amazon Prime, so not that accessible. But there was enough goodness to it that I rank it above Symphogear, again, comparing it to like a all-girl cast and kind of this world kind of devoid of male characters, which, you know, again, is kind of a weird point that a lot of shows with a female audience try to lean into more. But again, not much of a off-putting thing if you kind of accept that with the shoujo genre.
It's like they're doing all they can to pass the Bechdel test. It's like, let's not just have a guy in here at all so that we can just pass.
Yeah, it just feels like very not the real world when it has that kind of pseudo Truman Show kind of vibe to it. It's like, oh yeah, let's just isolate all these people from another group of people and make them not compete at all. So it's very odd. But alongside that, the CGI wasn't too bothering. There's only a few moments where the tanks are like moving in a very rapid movement that's very noticeable. But it's a very interesting anime, and I'm glad that I finally watched it because I want to get to Girls Last Tour eventually, which is kind of in the same genre of military and apocalyptic. Because this is kind of an apocalyptic story of, yeah, go on this aircraft carrier, go to school, learn how to be a soldier, but and go into like as club activities and have live rounds shot at you. So it's kind of funny in that way, but there was a lot of attention to detail to the position that each girl plays inside the tank, and there's enough shop talk of how a tank works. It makes it very educational. So I liked it, but you benched it, so we can move on. All right, so what was your number 8?
My number 8 was Jörmungand, but it was a yeet. Oh, okay, so we're going to get back to it.
All right, so your number 7.
My number 7 is Shin Sekai Yori from Another World.
All right, that's a yeet.
All right, so we shall get back to it later. All right,
cool, nice. All right, so my number 7 is Robotics Notes.
Oh, that's a yeet for me.
Oh, sweet. All right, finally a yeet from you. All right, awesome. So is that my number 7? Your yeet? Okay, so you're number 6.
So my number 6 is Blast of Tempest.
That is a bench.
I need to know why I was benched, but as Blast of Tempest was our episode 97, which we had covered an anime that is loosely based off or highly influenced by Hamlet, as well as the show, the play by Shakespeare, The Tempest, where we follow Mihiro and his best friend in trying to uncover his sister's murder, and in doing so, they have to fight mages along the way, and they are getting help from a mage who has been isolated on an island because she's just that overpowering. And it's the reason why I have it a little bit high, or at least like higher in my lower 5, is because of the story, at least like from what I've seen. It's very, very good, very well paced. I haven't seen more than the 12 episodes that I had mentioned before, and I would say that that's sort of why it is a little bit lower on my list, because even though it is a full 24 episodes, I remember when watching like those first 12 episodes, it felt like it was a good arc to end the show on, or at least like I was under the impression that I had finished the entire show, whereas like there's more to watch. So I do plan on going back and finishing up, And if that's the case, if it ends up being better, I may move it on the list. But at least for as it is right now, that's where it's going to be. It's has a good balance of, as I said, the pacing was good. So you get a sense of, you have a good sense of dread, you have a good sense of urgency, and you also are given times to sit and reflect in it a little bit in regards to the characters. And I did mention the interpersonal character conflicts. So in the previous episode, so if you want to get more of my opinion, go back and watch that episode. But yeah, that's what I have for my number six. So why didn't Blast of Tempest make your list? Was it because you weren't able to finish it, or was it because of something else?
No, exactly that. So I only watched the first four episodes, and that was our previous episode, so I didn't have time this last week since there were college early action applications due for my students. So I did not have time to watch it. So I just think that's an important stipulation for me to keep hold of. Like, oh, I only can judge these by their completeness. So, yeah, fair placement of Blast of Tempest since you only watched the first 12 episodes. So, yeah, having it at your halfway point does make the perfect sense for it. So I'm glad it's right there for you. So your top... So before we get into my six... Or actually, let's talk about my six first because it's actually one of yours. My six is Jormungand.
Oh, okay. So we get to go to the Yeet from earlier. Yeah. So
where was it on yours?
Yeah. It's my number eight.
Oh, okay. So not too far, just two spots higher. So yeah, this was our episode 78, and it's done by Studio White Fox that does it's done by Studio White Fox that did Steins Gate. So the character design is very similar to that. If you like the character design in Steins Gate, you'll like this. But it is essentially a outfit of mishmash of mercenary types from all different special branches of different countries. So there's a very diverse cast, but the main focus is on the two main leads, which is the arms dealer as well as a young child soldier. And it's very interesting that they play very loosely with the comedy in this. And I like the lightheartedness of, you know, war profiteering. Well, no, guns trading. What's that called? Weapons trafficking.
Yeah.
And it's very Lord of War if you've seen the Nicolas Cage movie, and I think I talked very highly of it. So I only watched the first three episodes when we reviewed it back in the original episode, but after coming back to it for the 12 episodes available on Crunchyroll and Funimation, it does hold up to the very end, and I like the trajectory that the characters take and the whole, you know, egotism of the main character and their like machinations do feel very like similar to like Lush and other big high profile psychological thriller characters. And I very much liked how she's like portrayed as kind of manic depressant or bipolar. I don't really know how to diagnose her properly.
She has some sort of psychological condition going on.
She is very untentative to reality, I guess. She plays very much of a Harley Quinn kind of type of character. So it's very fun. It's very endearing, especially if you go back. I watched it in the dub, and the humor is really on point with the delivery of comedic lines, as well as like the voice cast is very high, like performing to like their nationalities as well. So it's a very good mashup. It's like their character voices sound match their weaponry, their expertise, their body language. It's just all matches up pretty well. So like for all that reasons, it made my borderline for my top five. But why is it your number eight?
So it's mainly because of, it's funny, it's the complaints that I had during the episode where it's like it feels like Black Lagoon, and probably because of that, like why people would gravitate towards it. It has very much that episodic feel to it, and it's something that's familiar. It's like weapon arms dealer having to deal with the scum of the world, and then we're seeing things through the eyes of a child soldier. And not only that, but the characters are also very entertaining themselves. I would say, what character? I think it was like the older, gruff character, and then the chick with the eye patch, she can be pretty fun at times just because of what they do or they say to the main arms dealer character. And as you keep watching, you are introduced to other characters. Like, you find out that the main arms dealer, weapons broker, her brother is in the same trade, and it seems like they screw each other over on plenty of occasions. And that seems to be a very interesting dynamic moving forward. Essentially, that's why I would have it there. With this one, as I said before, this was another split decision. It was between this one or Batum. And I feel like with Jormungand, it's more fun to watch, right? Even though that's very weird to say because of the subject matter. Again, you're talking about war, you're talking about profiteering, you're talking about child soldiers, but because of the characters, it has a more lighthearted tone, whereas with Batum, you're literally in a death game. And with these people who don't necessarily have an agency in how they got to their situation. Whereas in Jormungand, even though a lot of these characters don't have a lot of choice, you're still under the impression that they sort of chose this way of life, or at least they have come to accept their way of life and are embracing it. Whereas you can't really embrace a death game unless you sacrifice your insanity. And even though the characters in Jormungand, they are a little bit unhinged, they don't come off as insane. At least not... They seem coherent, so to speak. So that's sort of why I have it on my list at number 8.
Gotcha, yeah. It definitely gives vibes of The Losers, if anyone remembers The Losers from, I guess, early 2008? It was pretty early when Chris Evans was not even Captain America yet. But anyways, yeah. So going through your bottom five, can you go through your bottom five real quick one more time?
My number 10 is Suritama. My number 9 is Simple Gear. My number 8 is Jormungand. My number 7 is Shin Sekaiyori, and my number 6 is Blast of Tempest.
Yeah, because we had a couple of yeets and benches, so it makes sense. But yeah, my bottom 5, so from spot 10 was Sword Art Online, number 9, Simple Gear, number 8, Girls in Panzer, number 7, Robotic Notes, and number 6, Jormungand. So, all right, now we're into the real meats and potatoes of the episode with our top 5, so... Sam, the
top 5.
Oh, that's a good that's a good marker for the codes and duplicate below for time codes. All right, cool. So, what is your number 5?
My number 5 is Robotic Notes.
Oh, cool. Okay, perfect timing. So, 2 spots above mine. So, what do you love about Robotic Notes?
Almost everything about it. I like the characters, the way that the main two characters interact with each other. I love how one of the characters just is a diehard, two of the characters from what they introduced. I haven't, seen past episode 3, but the main female character who's heading the club, her love for giant robots and the extra class member that they have sequestered, the one who was participating in the robotic tournaments by himself under secrecy, how he was sort of like a closeted weeb. I sort of love how they depict those two characters. The mystery box that they have in regards to the illness that the main two characters have, as well as the dynamic they have with one another, where one sort of acts like the parent for the other to make sure that she doesn't go off on the deep end, and she sort of pulls him along because he is apathetic in nature, and if it wasn't for her, I think he probably would have flunked out of school just because of his lack of interest in studies. So And the fact that they have, like, this main goal, and we get that sort of media res to it as well. But it, even though, like, the subject matter seems to deal with something dark, it has a very hopeful, light tone to it. And so I am looking forward to how it would conclude. But Jay, it's on your list because you had finished it in its entirety. So why is it in your number 7 spot?
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's right there at the limit, right below my, you know, Jormungandr. But it is reminding me, it has these, like, the wholesome vibes of, like, what you said, but it reminded me most of Big Hero 6. And I don't know if we mentioned that during the episode, but
is this... How does it remind you of Big Hero 6?
Yeah, because it's coming together, this group of kids that want to build a very incredible invention, of course. You know, just the innovation of children's is a very positive message of, I don't know if it's like STEM support or, you know, just the idea of pursuing a goal when you're a kid. But the idea of, you know, friendship supporting each other. And again, that's what I think is the main strength of it, is that there's never a sign of romantic interest between the two main leads. They're just generally two platonic friends. It's like really refreshing to see. But there is a trajectory between this and like the ending of where it goes. Because, you know, Production IG does this very well, blending these very hardcore sci-fi or, sci-fi ideas of, oh, yeah, we're just going to build a mobile suit and make it a high school activity with the. And it doesn't clash with real life. It always has a very hard realism to it. And everything you said about the two leads raising each other up, that they play off of each other, something I should mention, I hope I'll mention in our next episode with one of the animes that I want to talk about. But it is very endearing that the two friends have a conflicting disease, essentially, or condition. So yeah. It even reflects... even in a very minute way of the disease or like this mystery box that happened prior to the start of the show, as well as, you know, the idea of legacy with the girl's sister beforehand and then like leaving or pursuing a passion. So it's just like wholesome with a small darkness to it to give it a really grounded element to it. Same thing with Big Hero 6 with, not to spoil Big Hero 6, but the dude's main lead's brother dies in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So it feels very much similar to that. So it was our episode 91 that we talked about that in full length. But yeah, for how it ends up after its 22 episodes was really a very digestible story for, you know, slice of life and some mecha and some like drama with a dark secret going on in the background. But yeah, overall, it was just a good time.
That's very, very, very good to hear. So that was my number 5, Jay. What is your number 5?
All right. I guess I'm going to hear a yeet from you, but my number 5 is Excel World.
Oh, yeah, you know it. It's going to be a yeet.
Okay, cool. Awesome. All right. So that was my number 5. So your number 4 is what?
But my number 4 is Space Brothers.
That is a one spot yeet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we'll come right back to it very soon, but
we'll come back.
Yeah. All right, cool. So I'm assuming this is not on your list then, since it's so high up on my list, but my number 4 is Daily Lives of High School Boys.
Oh, yes, that is a bench for me.
All right, cool. Yeah, slice of life, of course. No, but it is a wild thing that I wasn't expecting, that I was going to enjoy comedy in the same way that I enjoy Nichijou. So came out the year after, kind of the same slice of life kind of premise of, you know, high school students having exaggerated lives, but in the way of it actually tackling like boys adolescence drama is so funny to me, because it just feels so real that it cringes me when you watch certain scenes. Because like there's so many infamous scenes that people probably know that come from this show but haven't actually watched the show, like trying on your sister's bra.
Yes.
like that is cringe, but it's also cringe in a way of like, oh yeah, boys do stupid things when they hang out, or their curiosity runs wild. And then the same thing with Niji Joe kind of bleeds that absurdity into the town, but High School Boys kind of bleeds it kind of inwardly. It's like everyone has a secret, everyone has some kind of oddity to them, and there's misunderstandings that happens between boys and girls, between boys and boys, and girls and girls. So it just takes a very kind of mature look at adolescents' lives and just make a comedy out of it. So it is, how long is it? It is 12 episodes, so easily digestible. And again, something we talked about, it being a surprise, that's done by Studio Sunrise, which is known for their mechas, but it's available on Funimation and Amazon. We talked about it on episode 70. But it's so high up on my list because it's the one comedy of the year that really got me, you know, really got me, busted my gut. And it's so, oh man, what is so great about it is the great thing of everything I just talked about. I think the single greatest thing is the relationship between the three main male leads, and like how much brotherly love that they have between each other. And I think that's something that people will get attached to when they watch it. It's like, wow, these guys are deep, deep, intimate friends that will like literally die for each other. And it's something, you know, again, talking about wholesomeness, but it's very a wholesome message, is that you can find friends in high school that will really sync up with who you are as a person. So, you know, all those slice of life elements I really reflected on really holistically, and it just sells for me. But that's my number four. Nowhere on your list, so we can go on to your number three. Yeah, your number
three. Yes. So my number three, you might get mad at me for this. My number three is Psycho Pass.
Okay, that's a yeet.
Of course.
Only a one spot yeet. Only a one spot yeet.
What?
All right. So yes. Yeah, I guess that ruins my number one spot. But okay, my bad. Shouldn't have said that number one space. But anyways, yeah, so we're back to Space Brothers then. then yeah, we're right back to Space Brothers, but it's my number three and your number four. So we kind of have a similar vibe to it. So it has a total of 99 episodes. I did not watch all 99 episodes. I watched 24 because their season actually breaks at 55. Because it's like a part one and a part two versus season. So I just did the 24 episode test, which is kind of halfway between episode 55. So I was like, that's probably enough. But it is a thing of the same vein as High School Boys. It's like, now these two are actually brothers. So it has like a little extra family dimension to it. It has the same comedy elements of brothers kind of joshing each other or trying to one-up each other, or the trauma that you share being living in the same household and pursuing the same dreams. It is so hard with, you know, anime to kind of sell you on the idea that people are related. Even in Hollywood, like when people are cast as siblings, you're like, are these two really siblings? Same thing as like the TikTok trend of asking people, oh, are these people dating or are these people siblings kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But you definitely feel the vibe that the two main leads in Space Brothers are brothers. And it is wildly entertaining in talking about space travel, as well as getting into the shop talk of what it's like being a astronaut. It does go into a lot of similar vibes as like a sports anime, of like a training montage and like all the mechanics of being because astronauts are athletes essentially. So yeah. I like that kind of extra dimension to it, that they kind of approach in a very realistic writing kind of sense. And the humor is really like, it's not like the central selling point of it, but there are like comedic moments to it. So why is it your number four?
So a little bit of a reason why I chose this one is like what you said. It's the comedy's done very, very, very well. And there is an end goal, right? You have these brothers that are working to become astronauts or to become part of a space exploration or to join on a certain space mission. That's sort of why I chose this aside from Daily Lives of High School Boys, like, because there is a story that sort of propagates it. In Daily Lives, it is funny. It's nice to watch and turn your brain off of. But like with Space Brothers, as you said, like with the shop talk and with what they go into in regards to space exploration, you learn more about real world astronauts, or there are things that they have to go through in order for training, in order to get ready for missions, things of that nature. And that's sort of where I have it. Like, it's nice, it's fun, and it's light. I would say, like, a little bit that sort of, like, helps it too is that you focus on characters that are, what, is he in his late 30s, early 40s? He's an adult.
Yeah, he's an adult, yeah.
So, like, the fact that this anime, like, focuses on such an older age group and does so well, it's a testament to its storytelling, because half of our list down here, you're dealing with people who are high school or middle school age, of the animes that we've already talked about. And so, you know, just a testament to its writing. And I haven't had a chance to finish watching it, but from what I have seen, like, pretty much just I'm in agreement with what you said in regards to the writing, the relationship between the brothers, how they essentially push one another to achieve their dreams, and I'm here for it.
Right, yeah, some more wholesomeness for you. But yeah, very interesting year of wholesomeness, or at least I think my list is a lot wholesome, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, we'll look back on it in a little bit. But yeah, that is your number four, my number three. So we're on to your number two, which I think one of these is not on my list, if I'm keeping count right. And one of them is Excel World. So let's see which one your number two is.
So my number two is Excel World.
All right, cool. So I don't think your number one is on my list. Unless I'm miscounting, but all right.
No, I don't think you're... Wait. Oh, okay. I was about to say the same for me, but no. All right. Wow. That's going to be interesting when we get there. So, yeah, Excel World's number two. But wait, we didn't get to talk about Cycle. Oh, no. Okay. Never mind. I'm sorry. So, Excel World was our episode 84. And the story of Excel World, it is the light novel series that was written after Sword Art Online. So it's essentially the successor to Sword Art Online. And it's weird because it came out the same year as Sword Art Online, but the year difference between the two is such a big gap that the stories don't necessarily impact one another. And I go into great depth in Excel World, but like in my first viewing of it, I had watched the entire thing. I desperately want a season two to come out. I had learned recently, I think I learned during the episode, there is a movie that is out. I need to go and watch it because I think it's supposed to sort of act as a closure for the series, or at least give it another stopgap until somebody decides to pick up the franchise again. But we follow Haruyuki, who ends up downloading a video game known as Brain Burst that allows you to hijack the cameras. And in this society, they have cameras everywhere, very much like Psycho Pass, where you can hijack the cameras in your vicinity. And you can perceive time so fast to where it seems like everything is at a standstill. And in order to gain the tokens, in order to use this time-stopping ability, you have to compete in this battle or this fighting game aspect to it, to where you can gain more points or lose points. And if you lose all your points, the game uninstalls itself, and you can no longer use those abilities, and you can't re-download the game no matter how hard you try. And the thing is, like, once you become accustomed to the time stop ability, you essentially become dependent on it. And there are also some makeshift guilds within the game that are sort of power I'm trying to think. Well, guilds that sort of like control the landscape of the video game, and you get to learn the in and outs with that, and you travel with Haruyuki as he sort of quote unquote travels across the land far and wide in order to clear the game. And it's a nice fun run, and I think as a successor should be, it's probably it's a lot better than Sword Art Online. And my humble opinion of a person who is not an MMO junkie. But Jay, why is Excel World your number 5?
Yeah, it breaks my top 5 because one, it's the better version of Sword Art Online, and two, you get the sense that, well, not even a sense, but your main character is the underdog, and that's never the case for Kirito in Sword Art Online SAO, because he's just the Chad of Chads. But in this story, he's at the bottom. He is Silver Crow. He is a flightless bird. He is, all he can do is headbutt people that are having motorcycles, and the Seven Colored Kings, I think they are, is like the top ranked players of the game. And it's like, there's not too much of a death game to it, even though the punishment of losing the game is that you lose your memories attached to playing the game. And even shows like the consequences of it, that is like, once you lose the memories of something that was so important to you, it changes your person. And it kind of feels like the death of that person, because like, if all your memories of being a automail mechanic get erased, Sam, like, who are you now? It kind of sucks. So there is a deadliness. There is a deadly component to it, but it is a interesting cyberpunk story as well. It's not an isekai like SAO is. It does go into the tech of the world as well. Like, everyone's born with, or actually, I can't even remember how the technology is implemented. It's like, everyone is connected to, I guess, the internet via a microchip or insertion.
Yeah, it's a Neuralink. We talked a little bit about it in the episode. I think it's called Neuralink. Elon Musk has something similar or similarly named, where you have an apparatus that connects to your brain to where you can directly communicate with the internet. And in their society, people who are Haruyuki's age, who are like 13, 14, they are born with it, right? So like, as soon as they're born, they're implanted or they're embedded in the child's skull so that they can get that neural link. Whereas people who are older than them, they have to interface with the internet different methods. So, but because they don't have that implant, they can't download the video game. So that's why the video game only has 15-year-olds playing it, because it's made for a certain age group.
Right. So even that explanation, it's like, just shows off the clever writing of the show versus, oh yeah, you put on a helmet, and if the game developer decides to microwave your brain, they get to microwave your brain, versus a real like medical implantation or implant that's like stems from like cyberware. So yeah, it's definitely a cyberpunk story. Very, not even dystopian, it's kind of a utopia in a sense, but they do get into the darker themes of that, where someone, one of his friends is like being surveyed. They have like a backdoor surveillance program installed inside their brain. And then even in like the later half of the show, like they tackle the issue of bullying and like being recorded, and how does that, you know, work in a world that's watching you. So again, making that comparison to psychopaths is very apt. But yeah, it's a very interesting story with how they explore the powers that come from psychological trauma. So again, I guess this is the one show that feels very dark. Sorry, that's not true. That's not true. We're about to talk about psychopaths. But yeah, it does have a lot of darkness to it that I really appreciate for a sci-fi story, a cyberpunk story. But yeah, it just breaks my top 5, because above it are like more wholesome stories with D-Life, High School Boys, and Space Brothers. But then we're going to get into psychopaths. So that's my thoughts on Excel World. Really good version of SAO, and has been tackled better by more recent anime, but yeah, it's good story.
Definitely. Now I'm very interested in Cycle Pass and why it's your number two, because this was one of your defining anime.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you kind of have to separate the feelings of what's your favorite anime versus animes that define you, as well as what animes are best of the year. So for me, just for my top 10 of the year, that's number two in Cycle Pass, which we talked about on episode 94. You put it as your number three. So we kind of still have the same vibe. And I'm very interested about what anime I overlooked, because your number one is not on my list at all. But Cycle Pass is another Production IG anime that has 22 episodes in the first season. It has multiple movies, has multiple seasons, and it's available on Crunchyroll, Funimation, Hulu, Amazon Prime, so basically everywhere, same thing as like SAO. But it is a world that is, depending on how you subscribe, the world is either dystopian or utopia, where the civil system is in charge of criminal enforcement, where people are judged by their cyber metrics or their hue to say if they're going to commit criminal activity. Some people are born with naturally high hues or naturally dark hues, so they are immediately imprisoned at birth, which is reflected in one of the enforcers, which is the branch of military that enforces the civil systems on its civilians, where they can get paralyzed, you can get obliterated if your hue color is a certain way, or you can get arrested, basically just on, you know, how emotionally distressed you are, or how emotionally unstable you are. So there's a lot of commentary that it addresses as a sci-fi dystopian futuristic story, but it's really beloved by myself and others. But I can go on and on, but we did talk about it in great length. But I think something that gets overlooked with Cyber Pass is the main character, and I don't want to miss
Akane Tsunamori.
Tsunamori. And I think that's the most glaring weakness of Cycle Pass, is that they take the rookie cop story versus focusing on what they do in the movies as like veteran officers, or even how civil system was originally implemented, because she has grown up in the society, but she isn't written in a way that makes it seem like that way, because she is unbelievably naive. She breaks down on the first episode. And of course that comes from a shock of seeing someone gets turned into liquid, to red milk. But it's just a thing of her trajectory is less interesting than everyone else around her. And that's just like a detriment, not a detriment, but it's just a downside to it, that if you're not looking at it critically, you're kind of forgetting it because everything else around her is so interesting. But I think that's the main selling point why I made my second place compared to my first spot. But it's, and you're number three, so I guess you feel the same way, but it's less significant than Excel World. So can you make a comparison between those two?
I would say, again, with, I guess, like the theme that I've had with this list so far is like something that's a little bit light and digestible, even though Excel World has darker themes going on for it. It does have a lighter perspective on it. And I guess like that's why it sort of like went out in the end. And not only that, but it is more digestible. It's only like the 12 episodes that's there. Even though I hate it, but like you can sit down, you can watch it. Whereas with Cycle Pass, there's a little bit of work in it. They do dwell in the darkness, on the dark side of things, a good bit. It can be very compelling, and they do raise very interesting questions. And I would say a little bit of like what you said in regards to Tsunamori's character in the end of season one. When I first saw it, I wasn't satisfied because of what she had displayed that she was going to do in the beginning. But then in later seasons that they have made, I've begun to appreciate her character and what she and how she has grown. So even if I would say, like, that's one thing that's better about Psycho-Pass, because it has those later seasons to where you can see her become the older officer, the more experienced officer, and you get to see her character compared to some of the newer officers, somebody who is more in line with the simple system. Because even with Tsunamori, she sort of is a blank slate, but she questions a lot of things. Whereas some of the other characters that we see compared to her, you know, sort of just takes orders and go, doesn't really question anything. And so you get to see a good comparison between Akane as an experienced person, and then Akane's past when she was a greenhorn compared to a new greenhorn that's on the scene. And you can make your decision on who did it better. But the only reason why it's a little bit lower is because of how dark it was. But saying that aloud, it makes me feel a little hypocritical because of what I chose for my number one. Psycho-Pass is really, really good. And it was hard trying to vet for, like, those first few spots. But it definitely does deserve to be watched. And it should be in the top three for this year, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of shock value in Psycho-Pass in certain moments. There does get to be a lot of gruesome murders and killings. Like, just seems a little out of place sometimes, because it does feel more of a psychological chess game between Makishima, who is the villain, and Kogami, who is the second lead. And yeah, they gave her, Tsunamori, just like a bit of more to do in the first season. Again, like transitioning a little bit faster as the more matured detective or inspector, or giving her more of a role to play, like an arc. Yeah. Because where she begins at in the first episode and the last episode, feels like she's in the similar spot. It's like nothing really changes with her. And I think, again, that's just one of the detriments, which is just, you know, just a singular detriment to it, to make it a step down from my favorite or the best anime of the year. But Sam, your number one isn't on my list, it seems. So what is your number one? And prepare for me to be shocked.
So my number one is another.
Speechless. Okay, anyways.
That's hilarious. Like, I'm waiting for you to say something, and it's just like, nothing can come out. I'm just like,
That's interesting. Not the last one I would have expected, but do you like how gruesome the kills are? Do you like how it's Final Destination, comeuppance? Like, are the characters interesting? Because you talked about the premise, which is fine. It's just like, another doesn't stick with me at all. So I'm like, what am I missing out on this? Can you resell me on it?
So for me, it was mainly just like the mystery of trying to figure out who the extra person was. And as I said, like the reveal of who it is, it was a good surprise it was a very good surprise. And if you go back and you watch it, like, you realize, like, some of the off-kiltered things that stand out, that can be a little bit creepy. It's like, no, it's like, those are the hints to, like, who the person is. So it's more or less, like, for me, it's more or less, like, the story in trying to figure out who that mystery person was, and not necessarily, like, the characters. Because, as you said, the characters are very bland. There's not very much to them. There's one chick, she's an odd duck to begin with, and like, just sort of it, like, she has the aesthetic of Wednesday from the Addams Family, with the lack of personality. And even the main character, he's sort of just there just to be a reactionary measure. So that's sort of why, and like, I would say like the gruesome deaths, like they do give you some, what's the word? They give you some sense of urgency, in regards to what they want to do. And there's even a point where the kids, they become, where they take their agency in their own hands and they try to actively solve it. And there is an unknown third option in order to solve the mystery, and you get to see the kids and what all they have to do in order to solve it. And it's very interesting as well, because like you're seeing kids being kids, because like they run into this tape recorder and they're like, how does this work? And you see that they're frantically trying to get it to operate because it has the answer that they need, but they don't know how to work it because of the different time periods, right? So it's like little things like that was pretty cool to see, where it's like, oh, if they only knew to press this button to rewind it and then this button to press play, then they would be golden, right? A little bit like that. But yeah, with that show, it was mainly just like the mystery aspect for me. And because it was only 12 episodes, like I said, it didn't feel like it was too long. It was able to, you're able to get in and out, even though like the characters are a bore. It was mainly just like the mystery for me. So that's why it's so high up.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. That's fair. Okay. Yeah, the mystery box elements with the show, if it's really executed on at the end of the day, then it, again, sells the show no matter how bland all the other elements are, especially you know, watching dramas on TNT or CBS, like why get so many like, oh, these people disappeared, did they travel to the future, what happened, kind of thing. So it's very interesting. Yeah, and Final Destination is just death. So like, not the same here, so it's not really a good parallel between those two. But yeah, interesting. Okay, very surprise choice. So my number one is a yeet from earlier from your list, is from the New World, or Shin Sekaiori. And
so it's I find it funny that we both have like for our number ones children in peril and dying or getting disappeared.
Yeah, even more funny that both our number ones are going to be way down on the final list. But so yeah, From the New World, we talked about it on episode 97, two episodes ago. Yeah, right? Yeah. Okay, cool. It's done by A1 Pictures. It's 25 episodes, available on Crunchyroll. And so I talked about how CyberPass has like this very glaring omission to its main character. But with From the New World, it is so much more poignant, talking about a little bit of the same thing about the sense of governmental or societal control and limiting the individuals. I think many people have talked about how these two animes came out at the same time, one from Production IG, the other one from A1 Pictures. And it's amazing that the direction that they both go into, one goes supernatural with it, the other goes very hi-fi science fiction about it. But From a New World does it so much better. I so much enjoy the absence of the civil system in this world. Sorry. Okay, so that's not fair. But the guiding principle.
Wow, so you like it because Sybil is not in. Okay.
Yeah, because it shows how devious, destructive, how evil people are. Because we talked about in the episode about social conditioning and the idea of indoctrination. And this is a world where people develop superpowers. I think it's like 0.1 of the population. And there shows some flashbacks to times before where there has been iterations of the current story to the past. Is it 1,000 years in the future? I forgot the time frame. Yeah, 2000. Yeah, so you can see that after the emergence of superpowers, society reset essentially a couple times. So how did they establish societies after people started developing superpowers? Oh, they put limitations on people's powers, how they coded that into people's brains. I don't want to spoil anything, but they instilled a civil system like governance into everybody's genetics, essentially. And I'm like, that is hella creepy. Or that's hella the direction that humanity has taken once you reach to that kind of type one world civilizations. Like, type one civilizations control the planet, but it also goes about controlling people as well. Like, how do you set limitations on dangerous people? How do you crowd control masses? How do you control the things that they consume? So in the execution of that, From a New World does it better. And then they tack on, oh, societal discrimination between classes and having these hyper-intelligent rat creatures and other creatures in the world that came out through human experimentation. So it's not only that humans are destructive to themselves, but they're also destructive to the environment and to other species, mm-hmm. and how that warps other creatures as well. And you talked about it a little bit before that humanity has declined, kind of did the same thing. They went to fantasy elements of it, but they kind of went too far on that spectrum. Like, they introduced fairies that can do anything that they want, but mm-hmm. From a New World is more grounded and it's a lot more darker. Man, talk about violence out of nowhere. Talk about the worst impulses of humanity. Talk about violent crimes that you can commit against others, your family members, mm-hmm. your friends. It's a really dark story. And it's not hopeful at all. So that's why I was kind of like, oh, are any of my stories hopeful? Most of my stories? No. My top two are psychopaths and From the New World are incredibly dark stories. And they're very pessimistic about humanity as a whole. Is that there's a lesson to learn about self-control. There's things about addiction to it. There's things about restraint. And yeah, I said control, but control coming from yourself, coming about from society, coming about from your family, and how do you fit into society as the individuals, and is in society more important than the individuals? Is the survival of humanity worth losing your humanity over it? So it's like, I'm laughing through it because
that's a good point. It's like, is society so important that you lose what makes you human?
Right. And I laugh because at the very end, like the 25th episode is very just hopeful for the future because it's told in time skips, essentially. It's like, okay, so these main characters are main characters is because how do you perceive the world through the eyes of a child versus through the eyes of a teenager, through the eyes of an adult? And do you have a responsibility to the world? And I just think that maybe a lot of people miss this for the kid aspect of it, like showing the kids like as like, you know, school uniforms. And I think I talked mm-hmm. about the promotional materials around this, but it is very a surprise out of the left field because I knew I was going to go into psychopaths loving it. And I kind of knew that I was going to expect to not love it as much on like a reviewing. And then From a New World just slapped me across the face, saying, hey, here's the better version of the story that you love. All right, perfect. So that is the end to our individual top 10s list. So before we move on to our combined list for the, I forgot, we have a special name for it, but the anime that we find worthy of your time for the year of 2012, let's go individually through our list. So Sam, can you take us through your 10 through 1, please?
Yes, so my 10 through 1 list for the year 2012, my number 10 is Suritama, number 9, Symphogear, number 8, Jormungand, number 7, Shinsekai Yuri, otherwise known as From the Other World, number 6, Blast of Tempest, number 5, Robotic Notes, number 4, Space Brothers, number 3, Psychopass, number 2, Excel World, and number 1, Another.
My top 10 list for 2012 goes from 10, Sword Art Online, 9, Symphogear, 8, Girls und Panzer, 7, Robotic Notes, 6, Jormungand, 5, Excel World, 4, Daily Life of High School Boys, 3, Space Brothers, 2, Psychopass, and 1, very surprisingly, From the New World, or Shinsekai Yuri. So, Sam, do I have your verbal confirmation that the list that I propose is acceptable to you?
Yes, I do. It's not biased at all.
I mean, your three no, and my two. Yeah. Okay, cool. Because, yeah, I really care about, joking. I very, very much care about making sure it's evenly disputed because, yeah, because our bottom three were never going to make it on the list because we have so much different taste this year. It is wild that, yeah, it's so different. Yeah, because Excel World and then Blast of Tempest. But anyways, all right, so we're going to exchange one apiece. So for our final list of 2012, can you start us off with number 10?
Our number 10 for the Weebs Watch list of 2012 is Blast of Tempest.
Number 9, Girls und Panzer.
Number 8, The Daily Lives of High School Boys.
Number 7, Jormungand.
Number 6, Robotic Notes.
Number 5, Another.
Number 4, From the New World, Shin Sekaiori.
Number 3, Excel World.
Number 2, Space Brothers.
And number 1, the top ranked anime from 2012 is Psycho Pass. Not surprised, but surprised, I guess.
Surprised, but not surprised.
Yeah, it was neither our number ones. I think that was the most surprising. That brings it close to 2012, Sam.
Very nice, very nice. So, again, gentle listeners, gentle viewers, that was our top 10 anime list for 2012. And join us for our next episode, which will be one of the highlights or hallmarks that we would have for our, it's not really a webpage, for our productions? I would say, like, for our productions here at Weebs on the Weekends, as we will be addressing our top 10 picks for the anime of 2022 on our 100th episode! Woo! It's going to be phenomenal. Jay, do you have anything to add to that, or should we just wrap things up?
Oh no, we have a special guest next episode. We'll talk about very surprising. Is it going to be surprising? The next animes that we'll be talking about. I'm sure we'll have a lot in commonality because I think we have similar tastes. But this year was a really good year in anime. So talk about if this year is better than last year, as well as maybe some speculations about how the Crunchyroll Awards are going to play out with certain categories. But yeah, I'm looking forward to our 100th episode and maybe something special at the beginning and end.
Oh yeah, you know we always like to do something for the holiday season, and it being the 100th episode, oh my goodness, we are going to do the most special thing that we can. So definitely take a listen, bring everybody else around, maybe let us be with you around the kitchen table on Thanksgiving. I don't know if you want us to be out in the open. Maybe just put some earbuds in the one ear as you're enjoying that turkey and that gravy and that mashed potatoes. But that's all I have to say. But Jay, what have you got for us today?
All right. So as it is tradition, I'm going to close out the year by talking about some of the pop cultural events that happened 10 years ago. So 2012 was the year that the world was going to end, as according to the Mayan calendar, which, you know, little to no consequence happened. I don't think anything, well, there was a lot of bad things that happened in 2012, like Hurricane Sandy hit the east coast of the United States, destroying so much. Let's see, what else happened in 2012? That the musicians Rihanna, Adele, Bruno Mars, Gautier, Carly Rae Jepsen, and Taylor Swift hit, like, they topped out at the charts and won like multiple awards and Grammys that year. The most popular movies in 2012 was Avengers, Amazing Spider-Man, The Hobbit, The Dark Knight Rises, Hunger Games, and Lincoln. I love the celebrities that passed away that year. I guess one of the major celebrities was Whitney Houston, passed away at the age of 48. And well, as 2012 was the year that Mitt Romney and Barack Obama got their nominations to run as presidents of the United States.
Oh, I remember that epic rap battle.